This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. It's Friday. That means our week in review, and we'll start with Governor Charlie Baker's first State of the Commonwealth last night.
We looked at the big pictures, and we crushed the details. For decades, the people of this state have set the bar high and followed through. And because of all that, I can stand here tonight and say with certainty that the state of our Commonwealth is strong.
And while the governor didn't necessarily lay out a grand vision for the future, he did dive into some of the details of his first year in office, including his reputation as Governor Fix-It.
Now, as we end our first term, some have lamented how boring we are. And I must admit, that makes me smile. No fights, no yelling, no partisan scrums. Every day, the people expect their state government to work. They work hard, they have to sweat the details, and they have to perform. So should we.
And with us in the studio to take a look at the governor's first year and his State of the Commonwealth, and also the rest of the week's news, is Nancy Gertner. She's a former federal judge and now a professor at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, welcome.
Good to be here.
Also with us today, Boston Globe columnist Dante Ramos. Hello there.
Hey, great to be here.
So let's start with the governor's assessment of his first year on the job. Judge Gertner, what do you think?
I don't have anything bad to say.
Well, that's good.
There you go. I mean, I think his initial response to the emergency, which he found himself in, was appropriate and was extraordinary for someone who was new to the job. I do think it is amazing to make it through a year without any major partisan, you know, kerfuffles, much less blowups. I think that the jury is still in on what the administration will be.
All right, Dante.
I thought Baker in his speech sounded like a governor who knows that he doesn't have nearly enough Republican votes to sustain any kind of a veto in the legislature and therefore has to make an extra effort to be kind of inclusive on a partisan basis and to, you know, really try to create the climate that Nancy's talking about, this sort of feel-good environment, because he almost doesn't have a whole lot of other choice. I also think temperamentally, you know, that approach is probably what he would want to do anyway. So I think I agree. I think that there hasn't been any major, you know, any major blowups this past year, and Baker's speech certainly reflected that.
And he has huge approval ratings,
right.
So
right.
I think it was a fairly easy time for him to give this address. But let's talk about some of the specific things that he did bring up. And one of them, I think probably the thing that was maybe the news out of the speech, if you will, or something that he hasn't really said much about before, was his plan to, again, try to scale back the film tax credit. Let's listen to this clip.
We respect the legislature's desire to retain the credit. Mr. Speaker, message delivered. But we believe it would be more cost-effective to return to its original structure and believe the savings from this adjustment could be directed to creating more affordable housing and an improved tax climate for Massachusetts businesses that sell products and services in other states.
And, of course, that Mr. Speaker that the governor's talking about is House Speaker Robert DeLeo. He did talk with reporters after the governor's speech, saying he doesn't know any specifics about the governor's plan.
There are a lot of people, quite frankly, who reap the benefits of the film tax credit. Anywhere, so the people who prepare dinners and lunches, the rental furniture place, there are so many, there's such a ripple effect with the film tax credit that I don't think sometimes that's considered when we're talking about it.
Okay, so this may show that there is some disagreement here, but we've also got a governor who's got to make significant budget cuts. We know that that's coming. And also a governor, and we'll talk about GE in a moment because that still hasn't gotten out of the news yet, but a governor who's offering significant incentives to General Electric to relocate to Boston. So what do you think might happen here, and what do you think this debate might signify? Is it substantive, do you think, Judge Gertner?
With respect to the film credits,
right.
I think it's substantive, but I think what he said was very interesting in his speech. He says, I'm going to make savings on the tax film, on the film credit issue, which we then can direct to A, affordable housing. That sounds very interesting. And B, tax incentives to businesses. So that's very interesting. If he were saying, we think that essentially, quote, welfare for corporations should not be something we as a Commonwealth should do, and it should be direct payments for affordable housing and other needy things, that would be one thing. But he's talking about which industries will we value, the film industry or these other industries that are doing that are bringing business to Massachusetts. Where the affordable housing connection fits in, I don't know. In other words, I think there's a debate about film, the film industry, but it really is part of a wider debate about where we give benefits, about the whole notion of giving benefits to corporations to change the economic atmosphere, and that the choice of that approach rather than the approach of supporting sustainable housing, et cetera. So I think it's part of a larger debate, and I think he equivocated rather brilliantly.
Well, let's go to charter schools, because I think that is something that we'll probably hear quite a bit about in the future. So the governor last night reiterated his support for lifting the cap on charters. Let's listen.
I also urge you to be bold on K-12 education. Now, I know for some, expanding the availability of public charter schools is controversial. But giving parents in underperforming school districts more opportunity to choose a better school is nothing less than any of us would demand for our own children.
So that is Governor Baker talking about charter schools during his State of the Commonwealth address last night. Dante Ramos, I'm just wondering, do you think that this is going to be sort of the issue that's debated probably most on Beacon Hill, at least in the near future?
This has been a perennial issue, and for the last few years, it has certainly been one of the top two or three issues that's out there. And, you know, we can rank the other ones, but it's certainly in the top tier. What you heard in his comments last night was both sides of this debate re-entrenching, if you want to call it that. You note that Baker used the term public charter schools. Among supporters of traditional public schools, there has been an effort, and that would include unions, that would include certain parents in certain school systems that have a lot of charter schools competing with the public schools, that there has been an effort to remarket charter schools as, quote, corporate education reform or corporate charter schools. So Baker is reclaiming the mantle of public education for charter schools. And that's a little bit of a dog whistle, but I would, you know, urge people to pay attention to that. You know, it's funny because Massachusetts has been involved in this education reform experiment for more than 20 years now. And we've reached this point where a lot of the original ideas have sort of run their course, or people have they've worked their way into the system. Charter schools is something that the divides that have been there all along have really reopened. I think unions have become more assertive in Democratic politics in the last couple of years, and the push against quote unquote corporate charter schools and corporate education reform reflects that. So I think we'll definitely see this as one of the top issues. There will be a sharpening of the rhetoric on this, and I think it's one area where the era of good feeling that Baker is trying to create won't really be decisive. It ends up being one or the other, unlike on the film tax credit.
Right. Judge Gertner.
Well, I think that it is a perennial debate, and it really relates to the first question, which is, where does the money go? Where do limited dollars go? And do limited dollars go to public schools, understanding the depth of the problems of the public schools, or do they get siphoned off to charter schools with additional support from other sources? I think it is an unending debate. Our school system is not like the schools in New Orleans, for example, where there was no effective public schools essentially at all, and the charter schools were all there was. We're not in that kind of situation. But he's going to have to make, and the legislature is going to have to make, hard choices about where limited dollars go. And I think that that's why this debate is going to become more sharper.
And at this point, we don't know. We did speak with Senate President Rosenberg on the show this week, and he said at this point, you know, it's probably going to be a tough sell in the Senate, was how he categorized it. But there's also this push on the level of the city of Boston for charter schools. And we did hear from Boston Mayor Marty Walsh this week about charters as well, and it was a topic in his State of the City address. Let's listen.
I'm calling on everyone to come together to back all our children, all our teachers, and all our schools. That means fair and sustainable funding for both district and charter schools.
Now he's got an interesting position here because obviously he had a lot of labor support in the past, and labor typically does not approve of charter schools. It actually does not approve of charter schools. So this statement by Walsh during his State of the City address, Dante Ramos, I'm just wondering what you think there.
I don't have a good sense of which direction Walsh wants this to go in. He has talked about bringing all schools together and not pitting them against each other. And I think the idea of, for instance, having a common application for charter schools and public schools is something that could be a meaningful improvement in user friendliness for a lot of families in Boston. The question is just whether charter schools end up being perceived as edging out in this framework existing public schools, or the opposite, where in trying to make peace between them, the charter schools end up getting smothered by the big bureaucracy, so to speak, of the Boston public schools. I could see it working out either way in practice, and I just don't have a good sense until the policy plays out more where it'll finally end up.
Judge Gertner, I'm wondering if you think that the fact that Marty Walsh is speaking like this as well might give added momentum to lifting the cap on charters, or maybe not.
I think, once again, it's a speech, and he was trying to appeal to both sides. I don't think we know where this is going, but you've put this in the context, again, of limited dollars budget crisis, and you really do have two sort of schools competing, literally competing for the same dollars. I can't believe that Walsh would come out for lifting the cap.
Okay. Well, let's talk about limited dollars and General Electric and what's happening there. General Electric's move to Boston, we heard about this. There's a lot of talk in both speeches, Mayor Walsh's State of the City and in the governor's State of the Commonwealth. We heard both of them tout the fact that General Electric is planning to move its headquarters to Boston from Fairfield, Connecticut. And earlier this week on our show, we spoke with David Kochaneski, and he is a reporter now with Bloomberg News, but he covered GE's tax record for the New York Times 5 years ago. And this is what he first said about General Electric and taxes. Let's listen.
Well, GE is known for a lot of innovation, and they do it in technology, and they've done it in finance and capital, but they've also, in tax policy, they have been a trendsetter in aggressively reducing their taxes.
And he also talked about states that offer GE incentives. And, of course, we're hearing more and more about some of the incentives coming forward for GE, just now learning about $100 million to repair the old Northern Avenue Bridge, which I guess has to be taken down because the Coast Guard is warning that it may fall into Fort Point Channel. There's all sorts of things going on there. But David Kochaneski talked to us also about GE's record with state incentives. Here he is.
Well, I think on a state level, there's two things you look at. One is the taxes, and the other is the subsidies. If you look at what they've done elsewhere, you know, those two things kind of go hand in glove. And once you're there, you know, you want to keep them there. And so they ask for different subsidies to keep them there and to keep them growing.
So that was David Kochaneski. He covered this for quite some time for the New York Times. And I'm just wondering, Judge Gertner, do you think that because of limited dollars and we're offering a generous package to GE to come to Boston, on the one hand, the state might say, well, if we didn't offer this package, GE wouldn't come here. But can the state afford it?
I think you have to have the state is taking the long view. And I think that this is an issue that needs to be, I don't know, studied, right? I mean, it's a promise. The notion is that you would come and it would lead to jobs and the economy would grow and therefore the tax base would grow and we would get it back. I don't know. We just had a conversation about schools, and the question is whether that's an investment that would have produced long-term results as well. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good thing in general that GE is coming. There's something a little troubling about this being the motive for doing the infrastructure changes that area so desperately needed. So you have to step back and say this is clearly a governor and a government that doesn't want to raise taxes. And so what they're doing essentially is taking their limited resources and sending it to GE in the hopes that it will produce an investment going forward. Now, GE may be of the size and scope that it actually will produce those kinds of results going forward.
Dante Ramos, how do you think that these incentives square with Governor Baker's fiscal responsibility message? And what do you think about GE's record in the past? Should Massachusetts should it have been more wary about this?
I do think that the opposition to the film tax credit and the willingness to bring forward incentives for GE do sit somewhat strangely next to each other. The governor has clearly calculated that having GE here is such a banner improvement for the local economy that it is worth going the extra mile, so to speak, for them. You do have a sense, or at least I have the sense from reading the news coverage, that the things that are end up included in the final package, including the reconstruction of the Northern Avenue Bridge, it's not as though they were part of some pre-existing plan of things that we needed. Nancy just alluded to this.
Right.
There's something that's a little ad hoc about it. And it may be that this is ultimately great for the economy, for the type of other companies that it signals to come here. The one other thing I would say, that the lesson that you would take away from your report earlier this week, is that GE, certainly their tax minimization policy suggests that they contribute to the public on their own terms. Mm. They have a good record in Connecticut of, as a different interview of yours said earlier this week, they had a very good record of corporate generosity. Mm-hmm. They have a good record of employing limo drivers and things like that. In terms of actually contributing money to the general fund, that's not really something that they like to do very much. So we'll see how that plays out. Will they over time be, because they left Connecticut because of a tax issue, is it something that they'll be perceived as a flight risk here every time the legislature decides that it needs to reexamine corporate tax policy? I think we need to find out.
And have leverage over the government because of that.
Right. I just want to touch on something, and this is from Middlesex County District Attorney Marian Ryan. Last July, she said that she was going to try convicted Boston Marathon bomber Zahar Tsarnaev in state court for the murder of MIT police officer Sean Collier. And this was after Tsarnaev had already been sentenced to death in federal court for the bombing. She was on our show earlier this week, and we asked her about this. And the way she described it to us then was that she's essentially keeping all options open for the possibility of a state trial in case anything ever changed on the federal level. Let's listen to what she said.
Right now, this is an insurance policy. We are preserving our rights should something ever, in the unlikely event that something should ever change with that federal conviction. That's all that's happening.
Now, Judge Gertner, you've written about this in the past, and we asked District Attorney Ryan if she was backpedaling on her initial comments in the summer, saying that she was definitely having a state trial, and she said, no, she is not backing down. She is just implementing this insurance policy just in case. Your thoughts?
I'm trying to be judicious about my response here.
Because you are a former judge.
That's right. It's a preposterous position. She cannot try Tsarnaev on the murder. There would be a very substantial double jeopardy challenge where essentially the state and the federal jurisdictions are different. You can have contemporaneous prosecutions, except where the federal penalty is so much more substantial than the state, there are serious legal issues with respect to a state prosecution following this. So it's an empty gesture. And the notion that if anything happened to this conviction, the only thing that would ever be overturned is the death penalty, because nothing else was contested. So that if the worst happened, cataclysmic as far as she's concerned, the conviction were overturned, what would be overturned would be the sentence. He would get life without parole, which is precisely the only thing he could ever get in Middlesex. In short, in conclusion, it's a preposterous position she's taking.
Dante, your thoughts on this. There are some who have suggested it was your writing about this, Judge Gertner, that actually made her sort of soften her initial position that she was definitely having a trial. But anyway.
I'm under no obligation to be judicious, but I really can't say more than that it's preposterous. I think this is something that, to the extent that it is still under review, so to speak, it will remain under review indefinitely. I think it's difficult for the DA, having taken a position earlier that this was something that they really wanted to do, to back off of that completely. I just would not expect to see a local Tsarnaev trial anytime soon.
Right.
Well, we have just enough time for hubbubs, and these are the short stories that might not have made it to the top of the news this week, but they definitely caught our attention. Dante, your hubbub.
Well, a much-hyped winter storm this weekend may not affect Boston much, but it's already created days of chaos in Washington, D.C. The roads are a mess. Metro will be closed for the weekend. But especially after last winter, Boston can help. On Thursday, Marty Walsh, who was in Washington for a conference, offered to lend two giant truck-mounted snowblowers to his D.C. counterpart, Muriel Bowser. In a way, he was paying forward the help that Bill de Blasio from New York had given us last winter. I checked in with the mayor's office a couple of hours ago. She had not yet accepted his offer, but it's a reminder that last year in Boston was an outlier and that most of the time we handle the snow far better than anybody else.
There you go.
All right, Judge Gertner, your hubbub.
Well, I have an odd one. I want to talk about Sarah Palin and Donald Trump. And you think, what's on here that has not been talked about before? Sarah Palin obviously didn't know anything about foreign policy, obviously made major mistakes when she was confronted with anything, obviously looked like someone who wasn't ready for prime time. Trump makes foreign policy errors, obviously doesn't know anything, is clearly not ready for prime time, that is to say, for an executive position like President of the United States. But the coverage of his gaffes are very different than the coverage of her gaffes, and while I think both gaffes should be covered, you know, clearly, it says something about sort of the gendered role of the coverage of women and men. She had much smaller scope to operate in. He is given broad scope to operate in, and we excuse, or some at least excuse, his errors. And then there's the matter of the hair, which I won't even go into.
So gaffes. He gets away with more gaffes than she does. She's held to a higher standard. Okay, that's your hubbub. Well, I have for my hubbub this week, I have a little audio because with all of the movies about Boston and all of the comments about Boston accents, I have to ask both of you, did you see the fake movie trailer from Late Night with Seth Meyers called Boston Accent?
I did.
I spent 5 minutes of my morning listening to it.
And it was very enjoyable, wasn't it?
It's a work of art.
So we have an excerpt of this fake trailer from the fake movie Boston Accent that Seth Meyers played on his show last night. Let's listen to this clip.
In a town where loyalty is king, where the line between right and wrong is blurred, and justice is anything but blind, one thing reigns supreme.
You all know me. I'm not just a cop. I'm a father, I'm a son, and above all, I'm from Boston.
Boston Accent.
That's a clip from the fake trailer for the fake movie Boston Accent that was on Late Night with Seth Meyers last night. There is a link to that video at our website, radioboston.org. But that's it for us this week. Nancy Gertner, former federal judge and now a professor at Harvard Law School, thanks very much for being with
us. Thank you.
Also, Dante Ramos, Boston Globe columnist, I'd like to thank you as well.
Thank you.
And stay with us. Coming up, we're checking in on the Bernie Sanders Hillary Clinton rivalry in New Hampshire. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.